This is Center Stage Minnesota. I'm Charlie Polkerbeck. I'm your host for Center Stage Minnesota this edition, and that is our show where we focus on the talents of Minnesota musicians. Today we've got the second half of my conversation with Eric Pollard, mostly talking about his actual Wolf project, although he's got quite a resume as a musician. But the actual Wolf is what everyone's excited about, and rightfully so. It's his first major venture as the central creative force in a band, and there's quite a bit of attention being paid to it. And in my opinion, it is not hype. It is, well, sometimes hype creates hype, but I would feel the same way about it regardless because of the quality that is involved in what Eric Pollard has created for his actual Wolf. Well, either him with his USA release as a acoustic record, or with his band releases, Lightning and the Wolf EP, and then now his self-titled full-length record that came out on Chaperone Records out of Duluth. We'll hear later from Sam Miltich at Clearwater Hot Club with Dave Carr. We're going to hear from Annie Humphrey, and we'll also hear from Brian Laidlaw. Right now we're going to hear from somebody that you heard Eric Pollard name as a Grand Rapids area musician who has influenced him. And you may have heard the feature on Terry Longton as well. It was a pleasure to talk to him and a pleasure to bring it to the airwaves and to get to know this record. From That Was Now, This Is Then, from Terry and Nem, Terry Longton and Friends. This one's called Friends Are. It's the opening track on Center Stage Minnesota. We'll be right back.
touch each other every day. Well, me and my man, we're doing time. I've never felt so loved. He's never been so free. Driving through day and night, just to sit by his side for a while. Well, me and my man were chosen somehow to capture a dream, chosen by a love we've never dreamed of. Me and my man, we're doing time. I've never felt so loved. He's never been so free. The further they took him away, the closer we became. My mouth and kisses me deeply. He opens my heart, comes inside. I take him with me. Our visit ends.
The frightening sky, the window light was glowing as though it were a boiler room with a bright red bed of coal. Somewhere inside, a woman worked to keep the fire going, enabling an engine to export the country cargo of her soul. Ah, but the coal in the engine is not the engine, and the light in the tower is not the tower. Not the woman, and the water in the river.
like a model train set whose engine moved with grace between the stations of her hands. I waited for a chance to board on each occasion they met, or else a chance to jump across the junctions in between the iron spans. Ah, but the coal in the engine is not the engine, and the light in the tower is not the tower. A boundary, and in the wind the tidal lines of pastures were obscured. My muscle skin and sweaty clothes were falling all around me, but I couldn't hang the meaning on the famous golden spike of the word. Well, 'cause the coal in the engine is not the engine, and the light in the tower is not the tower. The names of desolate and desperate lots untouched by any human, and fences in the dust bowl fell in homesteads without claims. But even with the borders gone, it doesn't make a union. Because the coal in the engine is not the engine, and the light in the tower is not the tower. Tower, all the man and the woman is not the woman, and the water in the river is not the river.
That's Brian Laidlaw, and it comes from his Wolf, Wolf, Wolf release, 2011 release, The Coal in the Engine. Brian's stopping in a little later today, and we're going to record an interview based on this project that's a State Arts Board grant-funded project where he spent a year in a sort of immersion with a partner that is from Hibbing named Danny Vitale, and also played on this record with him. Recorded it actually out at Tiny Telephone Recording Studios in San Francisco, which is significant to me because I'm a big fan of John Vanderslice, and that's his recording studio. And we heard from Annie Humphrey from her Edge of America release. We heard the song Doin' Time. Terry and Nem started us off. Terry Longton and Friends record. We heard Friends Are from that record. Actual Wolf's got a new release out. It's a full-length self-titled release. We'll get into that interview, the second part of that interview, on the other side of this tune from the new release called 1,000 Eyes. Actual Wolf on Center Stage, Minnesota.
A thousand eyes are cast upon me, or every night all the recklessness won't make up for you getting on. But the emptiness and fairy tales helps to save you from yourself. Oh well, I guess that I'll be wrong. Oh, I guess that I'll be wrong. If your cries could fill the oceans of your senseless moon, then the ignorance can't hide the fact you're leaving soon. The arrogance of tortured tales helps you put up with yourself. Oh well, I guess that I'll be wrong. Oh, I guess that I'll be wrong. A million lines behind you now.
1800 miles to cast upon the old worn out sea. And forgiveness is a million nights of sleepless dreams. And your other old tricks to sell, they won't even let you back in hell. I hope you prove me wrong. Oh, I hope you prove me wrong. Yes, I hope you prove me wrong.
That's Actual Wolf, 1,000 Eyes. It's from the new release from Actual Wolf. It's a self-titled release. Eric Pollard released under Actual Wolf an EP last year, a band EP, and a full-length record that was a acoustic record. And those both got a lot of attention, but it seems to me that this is the real shout-out to the world that Eric Pollard is putting out music. He's putting a lot behind this. Those other records gained traction almost on their own because of the music. Last week, Eric Pollard stopped in. We had a long conversation, and it was a good one, so I split it into two parts. We heard the first part yesterday. To begin the second part, I began asking Eric about how he sort of gathered the tools that he has, if gathering is the right word, for both recognizing good songs and honing them. Well, you mentioned Alan Sparhawk, and who's the poet that you named?
Mark Kozlik. You know, Sun Kill Moon, you've heard Red House Painters. I play with him. I've sung on a few of his records.
Okay.
He's awesome.
So you've gotten to see people that are highly successful tweak their songs, work them out as living works of art and live shows, and potentially see the way that a producer adds input going towards a recorded version and other aspects of going into creating and then also honing an excellent song. Has that taught you to be really almost like a ruthless self-critic in terms of how you try to make something into a something that you're really proud of before you send it out there?
Well, no, it just, constructive criticism helps you grow as an artist, and being able to take constructive criticism and handle it. And if you're not willing to do that, unless you're a genius or a savant, there has to be a selfless aspect to art where you give up a little bit of yourself for the sake of greater knowledge. I've struggled with it, but actually the best guy that's really taught me how to make things concise is my friend Matt Beckley from LA. He works in pop music and he's just a master. The cool thing about LA is they've got it down to such a formula that they know that, you know, the average person as far as songs can concentrate for like 25 seconds or something like that before they need something else to grab their attention. Something ridiculous like that. And I mean, it's true. If you think of pop music, every 20 or so seconds, some new sound comes in or something goes, or like a new beat comes in, you know? And Matt really taught me how to, he worked with RGC quite a bit. He helped me work out some of my songs from Lightning and the Wolf. He's really great because he's worked in that sort of medium for so long and taking an idea and chopping it up and saying, oh, well, let's do a half verse here and then go to a chorus and then modulate up. And then, oh, let's do a half chorus and then right into a guitar solo. Or I mean, we don't argue much, but we've gotten in some epic in-studio arguments where I've had to, like, go walk around the block. Well, we don't anymore because I realized what he was trying to do is he was trying to teach me how to step outside myself and really look at a song for what it is and not what you want it to be. When people seem like they're being critical, even stuff like when my dad, some of the best songs I've ever recorded are ones that my dad, who is a listener of music, loves Fleetwood Mac, loves ZZ Top, loves the Beatles, loves the Stones. He doesn't play music. He sings. He doesn't play music. Even some of my best songs have been when my dad comes upstairs from standing a door or comes out of the kitchen or, you know, and says, wow, that's a great song. You should record that. And you don't even think about it. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, that guy listens to music all day. He doesn't think about it in terms of notes. He doesn't think about it in terms of, he just thinks, that's good. I hear that song, you know, and he listens to some great bands. So he knows that feeling he gets when he hears mm-hmm. a good song. It's that kind of thing, too, where it's, as an artist, you should almost listen to what everybody has to say to an extent, because they are all trying to help you in some way. Especially if they know more than you, or if they're an average person. You should always listen to the average person, the county worker, or the firefighter, or the cop, or the dude at the bar who works construction, who says, oh, I really like that song. He likes that song because he doesn't know anything about music other than how it makes him feel. Yeah. You know? I think that's really important when you're in the songwriting process.
Sort of the pure end user of music, like you say, versus breaking it down into its components and analyzing it from that kind of point of view.
Yes, there's those two aspects of criticism that are really important to listen to. You know, not the super drunk guy that comes up to you at the bar and says the same thing that all super drunk people come up and say to you at the bar. But the guy who's really listening, or the lady who's really listening, and says, oh, I really like that song. And it's like, oh, cool. You like that song because it reminds you of something, you know, while you're at your nursing job listening to the radio. That's important because that's who music's for. It's for working people. It's for everybody. It's not for the artist.
Is all you need, and I can't give it to you, babe. Struggle, troubles never faded. Separation from my mating call. Too much to bear. Singing softly in your dreams. Whisper solitary. Well, I cannot be discreet, dear. If I should die before the night falls gray, keep me in your heart, my love. I'll die a man someday. Talking enough, praying, prancing through the room, following some other impulse. Denying blame, but it's your fault now. Who do you speak to? Formalities appear relenting. Took to mention how I ponder. How does my mind stop the wandering? If I should see another breaking day, oh, desperate, dreadful memories, I'd die, man, someday. Passing light, mourning for no one should you offer. Wanting, wanting, ever wanting. Looking hard but never showing you. If I should see another breaking day, desperate, dreadful memory. If I should die before the night falls gray, keep me in your heart, my love. I died a man today.
Simply titled Time. That's a closing track on Actual Wolf's self-titled release. That's out on Chaperone Records out of Duluth. You can get that on really nice 180-gram vinyl if you're interested in doing that. You're listening to Center Stage Minnesota. Center Stage Minnesota is our show at Northern Community Radio, where we focus on the talents of Minnesota musicians. And Center Stage Minnesota is an original production of Northern Community Radio, heard on the stations of Ampers. Find us online at kaxe.org. The show, Center Stage Minnesota, is supported by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Eric Pollard, interestingly enough, I don't know if this is full disclosure or just an interesting fact. I'm 43, Eric's 33, and he grew up right next door to my grandpa in Grand Rapids. Grandpa Len Polkerbeck, who I consider to be definitely one of my role models, a really great person. And I imagine we probably have some overlapping or very similar feelings about that man. I guess I just should say that. That's not why I'm so interested in what Eric's doing these days. I hadn't seen him for years and years, and my only memory of him was a very young child running around. When I found out from Alan Sparhawk from talking to him that he was playing in Low, that was my first knowledge that he had continued on in music after the Dukes of Hubbard. I don't know. That's just sort of an interesting small world kind of fact. I have a feeling that my grandpa probably prepared as many ice cream cones and root beer floats for Eric Pollard as he did for me and my younger sister and my cousins and every other kid in the neighborhood. But back to our conversation with Eric. Very serious conversation about music.
What nerves are associated with knowing that you're going to go out and give your full effort to your creative abilities and you're going to become the central creative contributor to a band?
It's scary as hell. It's scary. It's frightening. But you just learn to control it. It is frightening when you're the central, when you're the creative aspect of the band. Because music making is a real pass-fail kind of thing. People either like it or they don't like it. And you either make it, you either make money doing it, or you don't make any money. There's no real, like, middle. It's either you got it or you don't. People like it or they don't. And it's scary. It's frightening. It's absolutely terrifying. But I just try not to think of it like that. I just get up and sing my songs. Try to entertain people.
There's the spotlight pressure, the fact that you've got other guys in a band with you that are hoping that what you create can carry them around too and feed them at least while they're on the road with you anyway.
Yeah, they believe in you.
What about the pressure that you put on yourself, especially if you know you're really putting it out there? Like, this is your full effort. And there's also got to be something beautiful. At some point, even before you start, you probably accept that you may throw yourself both shoulders into this and it doesn't turn out the way you hope. Does that add a lot of pressure, or do you just kind of accept that and just go for it?
You just kind of got to go for it once you realize that you don't have any fallbacks. I can't do anything else. Except hunt and grow my own food, so I know I'll always be fed and I can do that, but I have no other skills other than playing music at this point, so I gotta keep trying.
Actual Wolf sound seems to really fit in well with the Minneapolis and the Twin Cities. It almost seems like a very organic or natural next chapter, and it's hard to even put into words, but when I think of Minneapolis and what I think of rock and roll from Minneapolis, it just seems like it fits right into the picture.
Yeah, it's definitely got that Midwest vibe to it. It's got that Midwest Jayhawks, and it's got that Minneapolis vibe to it, that Minneapolis twang.
Yeah, it's almost like I wouldn't even draw necessarily direct musical parallels. It's more about the feeling. It just seems to give me the same feeling and come from the same place, sort of an honest place, honest feel to the sound. There may be stuff that's overproduced and really big on a large national scale that may be considered similar, but this has this authenticity and honesty, and I kind of associate that with a lot of music, whatever the genre, that's been significant over the time in Minneapolis.
Well, so Minneapolis has certainly been supportive. So has Duluth, and Grand Rapids has been insanely supportive. So it's just got a real Minnesota. It's honest. It's got a real Lutheran vibe to it. Yeah, it's just good old honest music. Yeah, AM Gold.
You know, the songs that you've written for Actual Wolf that I've heard to this point are really high quality, and the songs that you've written for Actual Wolf are also, most of them, simple, not overly complicated, whichever you want to say, depending on the song, I guess, in terms of structures and arrangements, although there is a lot of layering in them. Talk about the particular challenge of injecting so much appeal and what I would call an overwhelming sense that one is hearing invention into these songs, even though they kind of mostly rely on subtlety in a lot of ways.
Man, I just write songs. I just write songs the way I hear songs, I guess.
They hold a lot of interest. How do you figure out how to get that in there?
I don't figure it out. I just write poems. I just write songs, and if the poem sounds good, then I put chords to the poem. I really don't have any. I don't think of it like that. I just write songs, man. Actually, I don't even write songs. I just write poems and use the tools that I've gained over the years to just put chords to the poems, and they just end up like that. And it has a little bit to do with me, and it has a lot to do with the guys I play with. It's just kind of, I don't know, it's way more organic than academic.
That's interesting to me, because you can look at bands that on paper should really wow you, and sometimes they just don't get there. You would base that on experience, maybe, and a resume, and what they've been exposed to, or the players, particularly the creative guys in a band. But there seems like the real difference is you can build up skills, you need the skills, you can't just work on pure talent, but the pure talent or the innate ability to kind of know what to do is what gets you that extra 15% or something that really puts it over the top.
Yeah, that might be. I just, like I said, I just write at this point, I just write songs, and they just, whatever happens, happens. I write a lot of them on piano and guitar, so I don't know if that plays into the, I never write songs as a band. I always write the songs and then bring them to the band. Like I said, it's way more organic than academic at this point.
Do you have goals that are kind of more abstract, that are more related to quality than style?
Wow. No. No, I don't. I don't at all.
Sorry if I'm kind of getting repetitive here.
It's wild. It makes me think about the songs in a different way than I thought about them. But no, I like, when it comes down to it, I just write a lot. And I guess just years of cumulative experience is just, I don't know if it makes it happen or what, but man, I just try to write as many songs as I can.
One of the things I see that you work with a lot, or that seems to work in your favor, is contrast and the production of the music. Just for example, the grittiness of maybe the guitars contrasting with the purity of the way that you produce your vocals.
Yep.
Is that something that you're conscious of, contrast, where there's something working in both directions?
No, I think that just has to do with more with mixing the music and the people that I mix it with and the people that I play with. We're all, like I said, we're a band of sidemen, and we all just kind of make music the way that we want to make it. It probably just turns out that way. You know, you throw everything into a blender and you end up just coming out with a real nice smoothie of tones and reverbs and delays and yeah, that kind of stuff. Mixing, though, I like to, depending on things like with Actual Wolf USA, we tried to keep everything, because it's just guitar and voice, so we tried to keep everything real gritty to keep it interesting. You know, the acoustic guitars are a little gritty, and then I do stereo acoustic guitars a lot. Like, I'll take two acoustic guitars, a really small one, and then my normal acoustic guitar, and I'll play the same part. And so it'll create this neat little, like, stereo effect kind of, it's not a delay. Oh, phase. Makes the guitar sound out of phase. The acoustic guitar, it's in stereo, but it makes them sound a little out of phase because it's two acoustic guitars playing the same thing. But that's just, I guess that's just studio craft stuff, like stuff that I like, that sounds good to me.
I sat down with a politician for some answers. He kept saying that I was insane. Communists are taking over Washington. Battalions of the poor should bear the blame. The middle class have robbed me of my money, and the Democrats
have given it away. And I said thanks for blaming half the population. I'll toast to you on Independence Day. He regaled me with tall tales of job creation, lectured me about the tax he pays. Socialists are stealing education, and the teachers and their unions are to blame. The working class have raided all my mansions, and the liberals won't let my workers stay. And I said, aren't your friends the ones that can't stand the legals? I'll toast to them on Independence Day. He talked down to me about the gay agenda, preached about the way things used to be. Adam and Steve are ruining Christian marriage, and they've drugged my youngest into their faggotry. The immigrants are closing all the factories, and Occupy is showing kids away. And I said, you're trampling on the dreams of all our fathers. I'll toast to you on Independence Day. I'll toast to you on Independence Day. 'Cause I will toast to you on Independence Day.
The Discussion is the name of that really potent song from USA, released from Eric Pollard. Actual Wolf is the name of the act. That's called The Discussion, track 2 on that full length. Actually, he calls it an EP, but it's got 9 songs on it. It's as long as a lot of records. We received support at Northern Community Radio from the state of Minnesota. Continuing on, Eric Pollard and me, Charlie Polkerbeck, having a conversation on Center Stage Minnesota.
How important is it that you can convincingly recreate something live? I mean, obviously some of the things you do in the studio aren't going to be exactly the same. How far away will you get from what you know you can do in a live setting?
I always treat the studio and live music as two separate things. And I love listening to, you know, Dylan with the Rolling Thunder Review, or Dylan at all, when he goes out and he plays all these songs and he plays different versions of them all the time. He changes the lyrics all the time. And he invites people to sing with him, and he completely changes the phrasing so they can't sing with him, even though they're already up on stage singing with him. And I like that whole stream of consciousness thing. So I just completely separate the studio from the live performance. The studio is great. It's like capturing a moment in time, a creative moment. But live is where it's at. Like, live is where anything can happen, and you can do a different version of any song, and you can strip down a song, or you can make a song as complicated as you want.
After the Great Northern Radio Show in Grand Rapids, you guys were playing over the locker room in Coleraine, and you were playing, I guess I would call them more renditions than covers. And some of the songs were songs that almost any cover band will get out on a certain night. Some of them were more obscurely chosen than that. But all of them, you guys made your own in a certain way. And it seems like cover bands kind of forget that the bands that wrote those songs probably would have died of boredom if they played them the same way live every single time they played them as the records.
Yeah, so Link Wray didn't go out and play Rumble or Jack the Ripper the same way every night, or Johnny Cash or Merle's Band. I mean, those guys are just musicians. They're fun, you know. That's why we love doing those bar sets as a band, is because we all grew up doing bar sets. And we all grew up playing those tunes. We love doing them because we get to put our own flavor into it. And there's something about that that's really great. I mean, that was so much fun to go play the Great Northern Radio Show and then go over and play a 4-hour bar set. That's great. I was talking about earlier, you're connecting with people who may not be familiar with you. You're connecting with the working men, the miners and the nurses and the loggers and the drunks and everybody. People that are just like you, the working people. And you're not putting on a show where you're up on stage and you're the focus of the thing. You're just having fun. You're up there having fun. And I think that's why we all get into music, or why a majority of side men get into music anyway. It's because we have fun doing it.
And the band of side men, as you've described, yeah. Actual Wolf, is that not just by desire, your own desire for your own way of hoping that you go through the world, but you pretty much have to get used to like pulling your ego back and being more, I guess, of a role player, or maybe the fact that you were a sideman before you became the central creative person. Does the fact that everybody's kind of either humble or knows how to keep themselves in check when it comes to collaboration and consensus, how does that affect the dynamic with you guys?
Well, I'm still a sideman. I just happen to be up in front of the band. I mean, I still think of myself as a sideman.
A sideman with ideas?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we all have ideas. That's why we get hired to do what we do. I always say that we're a band of sidemen because we all know how to play as an ensemble, and because we played so many shows with each other on different things, whether it's keyboards or drums or acoustic guitars. And with that group of guys, I don't ever feel like I'm the center of attention, even though I happen to write the songs. I just feel like we are a band, you know, we're a band. And I suppose being a sideman, yeah, there's that humility to it where you get hired to play other people's songs and you go and you show up and you punch in and do your best and you punch out, go have a beer or whatever. But that's how we feel, me and the boys. That's how we feel, you know. Our bar band name's the Gentleman Lovers, and that's how we feel all the time. We just feel like we're a bar band. Nobody's better than anybody else. We're all equals up there. And
well, it seems like music. You start off that way versus the egos that can sometimes get in the way of the talented person as much as it helps them. It seems like the less that person takes themselves too seriously, maybe the better off they are in the short term, but certainly they seem to have a better shot at long term. And I guess just starting off where your automatic mode is more to be ego in check than ego out of control, you know?
Yeah. So, and we're all just Dylan, what's Dylan's famous thing? We're all just song and dance men. That just pretty much sums it up. We all just get up there and we're all just up there to entertain. Check our egos at the door. We're all an ensemble and we're all up there to entertain people and play music for people. Whether they're paying attention or not paying attention, that's what you're hired to do. You show up and you do your job and you do it as best you can.
Well, and you've got a band of players where it seems any one of them can probably have their own. Yeah. Well, and it seems like any one of them could probably start their own band. The other guys could play the supporting roles and they would be the one bringing the ideas. And,
yep.
Not to mention the incredible skills and sense of music. Well, congratulations on everything. And it seems like even though it's been a whirlwind, it's like also just getting started for you.
Yeah, man.
It's nice to see it.
Keep riding the wave, right?
Yeah.
Just gotta keep riding the wave and hope it continues to get bigger. It's going well. And if I just work hard and stay humble, it should all work out just fine.
Well, thanks a lot for coming in, and I wish you the best of luck. I don't know whether I'll see you walking through our doors here next or on Saturday Night Live. So maybe we'll hope for the latter, just for your sake.
I think I know the answer to that one, but you know, I hope you're right. I hope you're right.
Criminals are facing, they're the bailiff is standing. she sat me down and kissed me, told me, hey, I think I'm dying.
Victims and Things from Actual Wolf self-titled release. That's the most overwhelming sense between getting to know Eric's music lately, you know, getting to know his work and talking to him, that I'm actually standing somewhere in the vicinity of music history as it's being made.
From the Twin Cities funk and soul lost R&B grooves from Minneapolis, St. Paul, 1964 to 1975 compilation release put out by Secret Stash Records in Minneapolis. This one's from Wanda Davis. It's called Take Care. Listening to Center Stage Minnesota, I'm Charlie Polkerbeck. We just heard Take Care from Wanda Davis from the Twin Cities Funk and Soul compilation. Compilation put out by Secret Stash Records that spans 1964 to 1979. Take Care with Wanda Davis there. Bringing us to our close of this edition of Center Stage Minnesota, this is Sam Milchich and Dave Carr. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.